welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Lavillier, delivering an hour of horror. Later on, it's Escape from 1951, but first, The Weird Circle, with a story called The Niche of Doom. This first released by NBC Syndication in 1943.
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, The Niche of Doom.
Never stop this constant tapping inside my mind. Yes, I've listened to that same hopeless tapping for days on end. I thought it would stop when I came to this rest home. Here in my room, my husband sits on the edge of my bed, watching me, knowing my thoughts, feeding me horror, tearing at the fabric of my mind as a spider tears the wings off its prey. My husband, Auguste Marais. My husband, my torturer, my captor, my murderer. A woman has a right to live, to laugh, to smile and be happy. A right to love and be loved. And I was lonely. I remember the day I was in the patio attending to my tulip bulbs, talking to my maid Rosalie as I spaded the earth.
Oh, madame, the garden looks just beautiful.
Yes, it does. I love this garden, Rosalie. It's the one thing in this entire dreary house I can call my own.
If the tulip bulbs work as nicely as they did last year, perhaps Monsieur Marais will allow you to enter them the garden contest.
I've meant to ask him.
Good day, Josephine. How are you feeling today?
Well, I feel fine, August. I didn't expect you so early.
You may go, Rosalie.
Yes, sir. Anything I can do for you, madame?
No, nothing, my dear.
Yes, madame.
You're looking very well, Josephine. Very well.
August.
You've something on your mind? What is it?
August, I was wondering if you'd mind frightfully if I entered my tulip bulbs in the annual country exhibition.
Mind? Naturally, I mind. You know very well I don't like you making an exhibition of my name in public.
But August, just entering the tulip
bulbs. I will not discuss it.
But it's so lonely here all the time.
Lonely? Nonsense. You've the maid for company?
Yes, I've Rosalie.
And I manage to spend one evening a week with you?
Yes, I know you do.
My dear, you should be very grateful that you have the position in life which marrying me has given you.
I have everything but happiness, August.
Happiness is relative. A girl born in the circumstances in which you were born, a poor, unimportant family, certainly cannot expect everything.
But I ask so little, August, just to exhibit the bulbs and the flowers.
I thought we were not going to discuss this anymore. You know very well the doctor told me at my age I'm not to allow myself to become excited.
Yes, I remember what the doctor said.
I'm glad. Please remember it. And now, my dear, I really must go over to court.
Will you be home this evening, August?
I'm never home on Tuesdays, Josephine. Enjoy yourself, my dear. Don't wear yourself out in the patio. You country girls are always lovely while you're young, but you age so quickly.
Age so quickly. He frightened me. I saw all the years of my youth passing me by as I was caged up in the house in the Rue Montmartre. I was only 15 when I married August. 15, and he was 55 then. 5 years of marriage had taught me the meaning of loneliness and tears. A woman has the right to bask in the warmth of her youth. That's why I left the house that day. I wandered out into the garden patio outside my room, and I walked down the boulevard to Grinnell's Cafe. I sat down at a table on the sidewalk, intending only to watch the others, to watch life pass by. The waiter was very friendly.
What will you have, madame?
An ice, a raspberry ice.
A raspberry ice, excellent, madame. Excellent for a warm afternoon.
How angry this would make August.
Sitting all alone, madame?
Yes, I... Well, because I wish to be alone.
Oh, no, you don't. Not when you've the opportunity to enjoy my company.
Please, sir, I shall call the waiter.
No, don't, please. You're lonely and I'm lonely. Certainly there can be no harm in two lonely people sharing a table for one short half hour. Now, can there?
But my husband...
Even a jealous husband can't object.
Really, sir?
And you are lonely. You really want me to sit down, you just won't admit it. Oh, I can see the truth in your face.
You see things that are not there.
May I, madame? Just for one half hour.
Well, there really is no harm in it, is there?
None at all. Thank you. Of course, madame, you know that I've lied to you.
Lied to me?
Your ice, madame. Something for you, monsieur?
Oh, same as the lady.
Oui, monsieur.
Nothing like raspberry ice to start a lifelong friendship.
What do you mean you've lied to me?
Well, I didn't just happen along just now. I didn't just happen to see you sitting here and come up. I planned everything very carefully in advance.
Oh?
You see, madame, I live across the way from you. I've watched you gardening in the patio of your home many times.
But why, monsieur?
Why? Why, because you're a beautiful woman. Because I wanted to know you so very much. Because I've seen something in your eyes that I've felt inside myself.
You shouldn't, monsieur. You really shouldn't say these things to me.
My name's Pierre Plantin.
Monsieur, for both our sakes, do leave me now. You've no idea how much trouble this innocent little adventure might cause us later on.
Oh, I've waited a long time to meet you, dear lady. Not just a day or a week or weeks, but a year.
I'm very flattered, Monsieur Plantin.
Pierre's the name.
Pierre?
You know, the first day I saw you in the garden, I asked my servant who you were. And when I found out you were married, I resolved never to try to see you again, but...
Why did you change your mind?
I saw your husband.
August is a very fine, upstanding man.
He told you so himself, eh?
I know, I really think so.
He's an old, garrulous, stupid bore who's overwhelmed with his own importance.
Oh,
frankly, my curiosity's aroused. Why did a lovely young girl like yourself ever marry him?
Well, I loved it.
Oh, madame. Please don't cry, please. If there's one thing that turns my bone to water, it's a beautiful woman's tears. Here,
I'm not crying.
Here, use my handkerchief for these non-existent tears, then.
Thank you.
Now, Josephine, smile.
Stop ordering me about. I won't have it.
Please smile at me and say I'm forgiven.
You're forgiven.
Oh, that's better. I promise to be nice. You see, Josephine, believe it or not, I'm very fond of you, against my better judgment. You'd better believe it, because I'll haunt you every day if you don't.
And that's the way it started. Just a talk in a sidewalk cafe. My first friend, perhaps the only friend I had besides Rosalie. At first, Pierre and I thought we were just playing at love. But by the end of the second week, I knew the truth. I loved him as deeply and as truly as any woman could. We met in the afternoons in the cafe, and in the evenings when August was out, he stole into the patio, and we talked of him and of me, and then of us, of our future, together. It was Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, that he was supposed to arrive at 9 o'clock. Rosalie was helping me dress.
You'd better hurry, madame. You'll be here in half an hour.
How do I look, Rosalie?
Beautiful. I wish I were as beautiful as you. Oh, madame, put this brooch in the front of the dress. It sparkles so.
Yes. Yes, I think I will. Rosalie, he's so handsome and so fine.
And you really and truly love him?
Really and truly.
But what will you do, madame?
I don't know. If I could only be honest with August, if I could only tell him and break away.
Oh, madame, he'll kill Monsieur Pierre.
Yes, I know him. He'd be well within his rights. I'm so frightened sometimes. So very frightened.
Oh, madame. Listen, footsteps. That's August outside my room.
What will you do? I don't know. Perhaps he'll leave before Pierre.
But if he doesn't...
Then you must pretend that Pierre's your friend.
Oh.
Well, look at my lovely wife tonight. Dressed up, aren't you, my dear?
Good evening, August. I always dress in the evenings, you know that.
No, I didn't. I shall hereafter take more advantage of your loveliness.
Just flatter me, my lord. I didn't expect you to drop in to see me this evening.
Were you expecting someone else?
Why, how unfair you are, sir.
Unfair? No, I'm, shall we say, more curious than unfair. You may leave, Madame Rosalie.
Madame,
What's the matter with you, girl? Why do you stand there staring like that?
Well, it's that...
Rosalie's expecting a visitor in my patio shortly, August.
A visitor? Yes. Rosalie?
Yes.
Well, that's different. A lover, eh? I suppose you'll be getting married soon, eh, girl?
Well, yes. Yes,
yeah, more's the pity. Mind if I sit down a little, Josephine?
No, do, my lord.
I suppose you'll be leaving, madame, and myself shortly. You should have told me, girl.
Well, I have...
You what?
But I didn't think, monsieur.
If you'd told me, I'd have supplied you with a decent dowry. A girl in your position can scarcely afford a trousseau.
It's very kind of you, monsieur, to offer me.
Well, my dear, no matter what, I shall be generous to you and offer your future husband a fair dowry anyway. What say you, Josephine? Is that not generous?
Very generous, my lord.
Ah, yes, it is. My girl, Rosalie, you shall be married in the Marais Chapel at noon Friday.
Friday, monsieur? So soon? 3 days?
Yes, Friday. A girl in love should be delighted at the prospect. Unless you've lied to me.
Lied to you? Oh, never, monsieur, never. I'm delighted. Delighted,
Yes, of course you are. Well, Josephine, you might help the young lady plan her wedding while I'm gone. And make a list of all the necessary items which you'll need.
Yes, my lord.
I shall leave the entire proceedings in your hands. That ought to keep you well occupied.
Yes, my lord. Are you leaving me so soon?
I have to, my dear. You know these Tuesday nights. You know them very well. Good night, Josephine. Give my best to your suitor, Rosalie, and tell him I'll do my best by you.
Oh, madame.
Shh. Careful. August can be sly as a fox.
Friday,
yes, it's Friday. Rosalie, he's very clever. I don't know how he found out, but he knows. At least he suspects.
What will we do, madame?
I don't know. There he is. Tell him to come up, Rosalie.
Yes, madame. Come up, monsieur.
Is old spider legs gone?
Yes. But hurry, monsieur. Hurry.
I climbed to my love's balcony.
Oh, darling, darling, darling.
Here. August is clever. He knows.
What? He knows? He told you so himself?
He came in this evening while I was dressing. I was afraid he might stay for the evening, so I told him about you.
You told him?
I said that you and Rosalie were engaged to be married.
Oh,
and
so...
And, monsieur, he insists we get married Friday in the Marais Chapel. He's going to provide my dowry.
You think he suspects you, Josephine?
I know he does. Darling, you must leave at once and never return.
Leave you and Rosalie to the mercy
we'll
of
We'll lie our way out of it. I'll tell him my lover did not like to be rushed and quit me.
And he'd believe it just like that?
Of course.
Never. Never, Rosalie. No, no, that's not the answer. That's not even sensible. Darling, sooner or later we'd have to take our chances and run away. Why not now?
Run away? Where? How?
To Spain. He'd never find us in Spain.
I've no passport. I couldn't even leave the country. And as long as I'm in France, he'd find me and drag me back.
We'd find a way to leave the country. Oh, Spain is lovely at this time of year. Beautiful. The trees are heavy with lilac bloom. And you'd like Madrid, Josephine. It's like another world.
Madrid. If only...
If only what? If only you've the courage, we'll leave at once. Pack a few things quickly, and we'll hire a coach to take us to the border.
Tonight. Tonight, Pierre. Tonight.
The suitcase is closed, my darling. Where's your coat?
In this closet.
Oh, let's do hurry.
Lovely coat, isn't it?
Everything looks lovely on you.
Listen.
What is it?
My husband's footsteps in the hall.
I waited for him and he never showed up.
That's a pity, Rosalie. And I had such pleasant wedding plans.
Here, quickly hide in the closet. Take my coat and suitcase with you.
Of course.
Here, take it.
Don't be frightened, darling.
Madame hasn't been feeling well and she lay down this
week. Well, she's probably lonely. I'll cheer her up. Josephine, I'm glad to see you looking well. Rosalie told me you were ill.
I had a bad headache.
What's that?
Nothing. August, I heard nothing.
In your closet. I heard something drop.
What could drop in a closet?
I don't know. You're better acquainted with your wardrobe than I am.
Of course, my lord.
You've so many headaches lately. Come, my dear, you'd best lie down and rest.
Of course, whatever you say, my lord.
You may go, Rosalie.
Yes, sir.
I hope I didn't disturb your plans for the evening, but the evening began to pall, so I returned home. Sometimes my friends can prove themselves quite dull. I was thinking of you and your beauty, and I was worried about you.
In what way, August?
Oh, in the last 2 weeks, two of my friends have told me that they've seen you walking down the street alone, unchaperoned.
Have they?
Not that I listen to idle chatter, my dear. I don't. You know that.
People talk. They have so little else to do.
Naturally, I understand that. But then, a very close friend of mine was at the Café Grenald a few days ago. He, has told me something that rather puzzled me. You look a little pale, my dear.
My headache.
Naturally, your headache. He said he was sitting in the cafe and he noticed a woman who looks remarkably like you, walk in and sit at a corner table.
A woman who looked like me?
She sat for a while all alone. Later, a man, a young man, joined her. He sat by her side. He called her Josephine, your name. Remarkable that a woman who looks like you should have the same name as you.
Yes, it is remarkable. Quite coincidental.
That's what I thought, coincidental. I might even have thought that woman was you if I didn't know better. Know that you're a dutiful wife, my dear.
Of course, August.
For a little while, believe me, I was rather worried. I began to think about the habits and customs of country women. And putting that together with your temporary restlessness lately... Well, for a while, my dear, I thought perhaps in your moments of weakness you had perhaps acquired an admirer.
Please, August.
But naturally you haven't?
No, I haven't.
Then when I walked in your room just now and I saw you looking so nervous, flushed, for a second I thought perhaps your, admirer was here in this room with you.
Did you?
It was just a passing thought, naturally knowing you've a headache. I realize that the flushed expression comes from that.
Yes, it does.
Then again, when I heard that peculiar clatter in the closet, a strange idea was born. I thought perhaps your friend, the friend you met at the cafe, might be hiding in the closet. You look pale, Josephine.
Do I?
Is someone hiding in the closet?
No.
I naturally will take your word. If someone is in that closet, my dear, I should be forced to protect your honor and do away with it. Would you swear to me now on the Bible that there is no one hiding in the closet?
Please, August, put away that dueling pistol.
Then you are prepared to swear before God on the Holy Bible that no one is hiding in that closet?
Yes, August.
Ring for your maid, my dear.
Why?
I said ring for her.
Yes, my lord.
Now, fetch me your Bible. You have your Bible in the room, my dear, haven't you?
Yes, my lord. It's right here at my bedside.
Put your left hand on it. That's right. And swear on the Holy Bible there is no other man in this room besides myself.
I swear there is no other man in this room besides yourself, my lord.
My mind is much relieved. Much relieved.
You rang for me, madame?
I did, Rosalie. You know where Monsieur de Gorenflot lives?
The mason, monsieur?
Yes, the mason, monsieur. I want to write a little note to him, and I want you to deliver it at once. Fetch me paper and a quill, Josephine.
Yes, my lord, I have a quill right here. Here's paper.
Ah, that's just the thing. You've learned to sharpen quills quite well, my love. Dear Monsieur Gorenflot, I am writing to you because...
Yes. That's what happened on that fatal Tuesday night. I perjured my soul, and I've paid for it. How little did I realize how much I had to pay. Rosalie left the room and delivered the note as she was bidden. My lord and I were left alone. He bade me retire to bed as I looked poorly and said that he personally would remain with me until my headache left. I assured him my health was much improved, but he would not have it so. I retired to bed, and he sat by my side until...
Monsieur May, Monsieur Gorenflot is here.
Come in, Gorenflot.
I've done as you bid me, monsieur. I've brought the cement and the paving tools.
Good work, Gorenflot. Come, bring them in here.
In madame's room?
Yes, in here.
Why, August? Why?
Rosalie, go to bed, girl, and get a good night's sleep. You don't have to linger around any longer.
Yes, sir.
Monsieur Gorenflot... You see that closet in the corner?
Yes, my lord.
I wish you to cement it up. The sight of it affects my wife quite strangely.
August!
Please, my dear.
But August!
You swore to me there was no one in it, my dear beloved wife. And I believe you. Surely there's no harm in sealing up such an offensive, ugly closet. I'll have another one built for you.
But my clothes...
I shall buy you new ones. What are you waiting for, Monsieur Gorenflot?
My lord, at this hour of the night, you...
You are sure you want me to do this now, monsieur?
Wait till morning, my lord.
I am positive, absolutely positive, my poor Gorenflot. Go to work at once. I will not wait. I am a man of whims. Strange, interesting whims.
Whim. August knew that my lover hid in there. I didn't think he'd have the heart to go through with what he had intended. So at first I just sat quietly by and watched. Gonflot laid first one row of bricks, and then another, and then a third, and then a fourth. Pierre was afraid by now. He preferred quick, certain death to slow starvation, and he began knocking on the door and calling out.
Please, let me out.
Gorenflot, petrified, stopped, and he said...
Monsieur Marais.
Go ahead, Monsieur Gorenflot.
Help me now.
There's no one in that closet. My wife has assured me there's no one there.
August!
And I'm within my rights, Monsieur Gorenflot. Proceed at once. Proceed.
As you say, Monsieur Marais.
Please, open it.
Yes, as he says, he was within his rights to do exactly as he pleased. The fifth row slowly fell in place, and the sixth. And then I knew that August meant to see that night's work finished. Seventh. I cried, I wept, I tore at his coat, I pleaded, I entreated. It was all no use at all. Small beads of perspiration shone on Gorenflot's forehead as he worked, and the rows kept going up, one by one, until morning, when the entire job was done.
Thank you, Monsieur Gorenflot. Here is 2,000 francs for your work and your silence. My wife's good name must not be bantered about in public.
Thank you, monsieur. Thank you.
How could you be such a beast?
Come, come, my dear. Dry your eyes. The offending closet is sealed up.
August, there's a man inside. There is. How could you deny it?
You're lying to me, Josephine. You swore there wasn't. I must believe an oath taken on a Bible.
Oh. Listen, don't you hear him?
Yes, but my ears deceive me.
He's calling out. August, please take my life. But don't let him die in there.
Ah, my dear, there's no one in that closet. Remember what you said? Ring for your maid, Josephine.
My maid? Rosalie!
I said ring for her, not cry out for her.
Of course I'll ring for her. August, be human. Please be human.
I've been more than human, Josephine. I've been godly. I've accepted your word as absolute truth. Don't come in, Rosalie. I shall see you at the doorway. Stay right out here, my dear. That's right. Instruct the butler and all the servants that Madame and I will remain in her room for at least a month. And our meals are to be served by my private valet.
Yes, monsieur.
And otherwise, we're not to be disturbed by anyone.
Yes, monsieur. For 30 days and 30 nights, I heard that tapping on the wall. His cries, his moans, his words, his pleas, I heard them there. August was stone, completely stone. He didn't care. He just sat and watched me. Watched my face, enjoyed my terror. Fed me horror, waiting daily for the cries that issued out. Oh. August, how can you? Oh. How can you be like this? Oh. He's there, Pierre, he's there. He's behind the wall.
My dear, you must be ill.
Listen to him. He's dying there. Each day his strength grows less. And as he dies, I must die too. August, please, in heaven's name, be kind, be merciful. Forgive me, let him go.
There's no one there. I'll call the maid. You'll need her care.
No one there. Listen. The tapping stopped. It stopped. Murderer! You pig! You beast! You killed him!
You're ill, my dear. So ill, poor girl. Come in.
Pardon me, my lord.
Please call the doctor, Rosalie. My wife is ill. She's going away for a long rest. A very long rest.
So I sit here in this rest home, listening to the feeble tapping inside my head. The same feeble tapping I heard on the closet wall of my bedroom at home. That same feeble tapping. Will it never stop?
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought to you the story of the Niche of Doom. Bellkeeper, pull the bell.
The Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from 1943, the story The Niche of Doom released with its original French title, La Grande Bretèche, penned by the famed French writer Honoré de Balzac. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, Escape, from August 22, 1951 on CBS, a story called The Silent Horror. A brief producer's note as well, after cross-referencing several different copies of this show from several different sources, it turns out that there are skips in the beginning for about the first 30 seconds or so, but rest assured it will clear up. It's Escape.
Escape.
Huh? Keep it hanging up there behind the bar. The strangers, I mean, of course, know about
radio
it.
Station.
Take a look. 21 jewels. Water-sealed case. Belonged to Tom Dawson, the painter. He was a little washed-out guy, always looked kind of lost. Nobody knew much about him, except he painted good pictures. I didn't know much about Elizabeth, either. That girl he brought up from Sydney. It was pretty easy to guess about her. She gave him the watch. Yeah. Still runs if you want it. See? Got quite a tick if you hold it close up to your ear. Sounds a little like jungle drums way off in the distance. I suppose that's how it sounded to Tom Dawson there at the last, when that watch meant life or death and they were waiting for him out there in the darkness. Oh, that's quite a story. Only it's kind of hard to know where it starts, see? With Elizabeth, perhaps. Anyhow, Tom was telling it himself in his own words. I think he'd start with Elizabeth.
I didn't understand Elizabeth. How it was between us, what she meant to me. None of them did. They gossiped a lot the way they always do in tropic ports. But they didn't really know anything about Elizabeth. They didn't know how sweet and how convincing she could be. How she could wrap a man around her finger. Like the time she gave me the watch.
Go on, Tom, open it. I want to see if you like it.
Like what, Elizabeth?
Open it and see.
You come home with a package and... It's a watch.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one, too. It's made for the tropics. All sealed and everything. It'll run forever.
Yeah, honey, but where'd you find a watch like this in Port Moresby?
Well, I didn't, exactly. I got it from Captain Ducar.
Ducar?
He has a trading schooner. I used to know him in Sydney.
Yes, I think I've heard him mentioned recently around the bar at the hotel.
Probably. He's been in port for a couple of weeks. Do you really like it, Tom? The watch, I mean.
Sure, baby. Who wouldn't?
Now you can always tell just how long you've been away from me.
In that case, I won't need it all. It sounds like a heartbeat when you hold it close. I guess that's what it is in a way. A heartbeat of time. Measuring out your life. My life. Second by second.
Oh, Tom, that's a morbid idea. Do you love me?
Crazy about you. You don't have to bring me presents to keep you that way.
I want it to, Tom.
Yeah, I know, but this thing's too expensive, Elizabeth. I can't keep it.
But you must. I gave it to you.
It's worth a couple of $100. Have you thought of how you're going to pay for it?
Well, I had some savings I didn't tell you about.
I thought you were flat broke when I ran into you in Sydney.
Well, I wasn't, though. Look, Tom, why don't you forget it? Let me worry about it. And anyway, I've already paid for the watch.
Why prolong the story? Everybody else knew and I didn't, that's all. Pure self-delusion. Because I had plenty of opportunity to know. And insinuations around the hotel bar, talk along the harbor front, remarks about Pierre Ducar. But like I say, I was crazy about Elizabeth. And I ignored it all, went on painting and didn't know. Maybe I didn't want to know. I'd been out on a 2-day painting trip in one of the native fishing boats. We got back to port a day earlier than I'd expected. It was about midnight when I climbed onto the wharf with my canvases and headed around the harbor front. I walked about 50 yards when I heard it. It came from a schooner moored at the wharf just ahead of me. I walked closer. There was no mistaking that laugh.
Yeah, you're such a fool.
Elizabeth.
You're like all the others. Full of words you don't mean.
And the schooner was Pierre Ducard.
Yeah, but they are pretty words, my dear. And you like to hear them, no?
Of course, I like to hear them. Well, maybe that only shows I'm a fool, too.
No, I think it is not you and I who are fools, but that husband of yours.
Huh? Oh, he's all right. But he's so boring at times.
How did he like the watch I sent him?
Fine. Only he wondered how I was going to pay for it.
Some men would have killed one or both of them. Other men would have killed themselves. I didn't either. Standing there in the darkness, I realized suddenly that my whole life up to that moment had been completely useless. Nothing. And even Elizabeth, my Elizabeth, had been an illusion of my own, like a painting. And the real woman, too, was useless, hollow, nothing. I threw my paintings into the waters of the harbor, turned away into the night, and ran. Nearly 3 weeks later, my crazy flight from the past had carried me deep into the black heart of New Guinea. Beyond the dank rainforests of the coast, up through the foothills and the mid-slope jungles of bamboo and liana. Until I stood one morning in a narrow pass that led through steep-walled rocks to a hidden valley. And I knew that civilization lay far behind. That the Papuan natives who moved towards me were headhunters. Cannibals. Chief of the tribe, a giant of a man towering a foot or more above me, raised his arms.
I'm going to be up. Anjay. Why you come here, white devil?
I'm Tom Dorsey.
Why you come here?
I've come to live with you, if I may.
Hey. Where you come from?
A place called Port Moresby, many days from here.
You're a headman that place?
No, and I don't have any wish to be headman here.
You could not be headman you want. I, Ramabu, headman here. Degala Bagodi Banjo! With hands alone, Ramabu can kill any man in tribe.
I don't doubt it.
Can kill you, too.
I don't doubt that either.
I show you.
Ramabu,
I hold you over my head. Like this. Feel good? How you like? I think you're not be headman here. I think you're not good for much anything.
No, I guess I'm not. I guess that's why I ran away. Why I came here.
You still want to live here?
Yes.
All right, you stay. But you cause trouble, I kill you. Understand?
Yes, I understand.
Good, that's good. Bonjour!
The weeks went by and gave me little time for thinking, for remembering. I built a house at the far end of the valley, planted a garden, roamed the woods to search for berries and nuts, and lived the life the natives lived. Timing each day by the watch, which I still wore on my wrist. I was fairly content. The past seemed far away. Then Jerry came into my life. I'd gone exploring in the north end of the valley, and when I came back at dusk, she was waiting in the door of my house. Young, brown skin, beautiful.
Hello.
Hello?
My name is Jerry. I've been watching you.
Why?
Just because. You did not notice me, though.
Why should I notice you?
Well, are you not like other men?
What are you doing here?
I come to live with you.
I don't want anybody living with me.
It is not good to be alone. Who will sweep your floors and cook for you?
I do those things myself.
But is it better to have a woman?
Not for me.
You will not let me stay?
No.
All right. I come again tomorrow. Maybe you change your mind.
Not a chance.
We see. Good night.
That was the beginning, and in a way, the beginning of the end. Jerry came back the next day, and the next, and the next. I argued, pled, cursed, but nothing I could do would change that round-eyed persistence of hers in the least. And then I made the first big mistake. It started the whole mess. It involved the watch.
We are late tonight. In a little while longer, all the things I cooked for you would be spoiled.
What of it? I didn't ask you to come here. I can cook for myself.
Bah. Look what I have cooked. A silver cake, yams, chestnuts.
Jerry, I've told you over and over again, you've got to stop coming here.
Why?
Because I said so.
Perhaps it's because you think I am ugly?
You know better than that. You're lovely. That's the trouble.
I do not understand you.
I mean, you have no business hanging around here. Look, Jerry, I already have a woman, a wife, back in Port Moresby.
You love her?
Yes.
She is coming here again?
No, she won't be coming.
Then it does not matter. What good is she?
That's not the point. Look, she gave me this. See, it says, from Elizabeth. That's her name. To Tom. That's me.
What is this thing?
The watch.
What does it do?
Well, it counts the hours, tells what time the sun will come up, and tells when it'll go down.
How does it do these things? Is it magic?
Well, yes, in a way you could call it magic.
And that is why you will not let me stay? Because the woman has given you this thing?
That's right.
But she is not coming here?
No, she isn't.
Tom, you know what I think?
No.
I think you big fool.
Jerry talked, of course, told the villagers about the magic watch. By twos and threes, they came to look at it, stare at it solemnly, exchange a word or so of gossip, and depart. I welcomed them at first, realized how lonely I'd been, except for Jerry's daily visits. Now I'd suddenly become a popular celebrity. But there was one thing I hadn't counted on, and that one thing was Ramabu.
Much talk in village of magic thing you keep here. Ramabu come see this thing.
I'm glad you did. Welcome to my house.
House. Fine house. You build with magic?
No, I just happen to know a few things about construction.
Better house than Ramabu.
Thanks.
Not good for one have better house than headman.
Here, do you want to see the watch?
Yeah. So this magic thing Ramabu hear about?
Oh, it isn't really magic. It's just a watch. You and I know that.
Yeah. Jiri say magic. Tell sun and moon.
Well, you know how women talk.
Yeah, magic thing. Fine house. You know what I say when you come here?
Yes.
What I say?
You said if I caused any trouble, you'd kill me.
He's right. With these hands, I kill you.
But I didn't think I'd caused any trouble.
Just one way, go out of valley. And guards watch all time.
I'm not planning to escape, if that's what you mean.
You remember now. Ramabu headman here. And Ramabu can kill you.
I watched him stride off, sneering a little, swaggering. I knew, of course, that he had the mind and attitudes of a 10-year-old child and that he was dangerous. But I didn't realize how deadly. Not then. So I went right ahead and made my one big final mistake.
This is radio station 2FC, Port Moresby.
Yes, that's the watch, all right. It's the same watch I figured in all of Tom Dawson's troubles, right up to the end. Or especially at the end, you might say. Of course, I didn't get it from Tom himself. No, a backcountry trader named Will Jonas brought it in one night. It's been hanging there behind the bar ever since. And once in a while, I wind it up when some stranger asks me what it's there for, like you did. Ticks away as good as new.
It Will's the fellow I got the story from, too, but sometimes, listening to that watch ticking away, I can almost imagine that Tom's telling the story himself in his own words.
The week after Ramabu came to see the watch, I started on a new project. Weeks before, I'd found a spring and a waterfall halfway up the cliffs behind my house. And I thought of a way to use hollow bamboo tubes to pipe the water to my kitchen. I spent nearly a month cutting the bamboo, carrying it up to the cliff, and fitting the lengths together. And then one day everything was ready and I turned the water into my new aqueduct. The villagers heard, of course, and came to marvel, taste the water, and look at me askance. Jerry was around during all those weeks. There seemed to be nothing I could do to get rid of her. Or perhaps I was growing less inclined to get rid of her. I suppose I should have expected trouble, but I didn't. When trouble finally did come, it came right to my door.
Come out! You! Come out!
What is this? What's it all about?
Come on, you buck! Stop!
Ramabu, what's this all about?
I come find out if man who live in better house than Ramabu, man who make river come to house, can also fight.
Fight?
You want spear, club, or hand?
I don't want any of them. What reason have I got to fight with you?
Maybe you won't be a head man.
Of course not. I told you that before.
I got any panko de gomino? Yes. People say you a big man. Say we fight, see who is head man.
I see. I don't have a choice, is that it?
You want spear, bare hand.
What's the difference? I'm no good at any of them. It was pleasant here. I thought maybe... Well, Ramabu, let's get on with it.
I kill you bare hand. Now, lift you high like this. Throw you on ground. I kill you, magic man.
Stop.
Jerry, go back.
Did you kill him, Ramabu? The magic thing that makes the sun come up will stop. He told me so.
His lie, not true.
There will never be a sun again. Only night and darkness. Jerry! Punto de Lego! It is no use, Ramabu. They will not let you kill him. Put him down. Put him down.
You tell them lie. You'll live for a while. But I think this magic thing like bamboo sway in wind. I think one day it stopped.
Maybe.
When it stop, I think sun still come up. If that happen, I kill you. Magonemba!
Jerry, I guess I owe you my life, such as it is. Whatever you want of me, it's yours.
Do you still love the woman? Port Morris?
No.
And do you love me?
Jerry, if I dared love any woman, it would be you.
I'm bigger fool than you. I wish I let him kill you.
Ramabu came the next morning to look at the watch. He saw that it was running and left without a word. And he came the next day and the next and the next. First it was amusing, but gradually the terror began to creep in. As long as it ran, I'd live, and whenever it stopped for whatever reason, I'd die. I took to winding it a half a dozen times a day and holding it to my ear and listening to it. The drums in the village seemed to be constant. And the drums, the watch, and my own heartbeat became mixed into one crazy quilt of sound. Crazier still when I came down with malaria. When Ramabu came and saw the fever in my face, he smiled and left, and I cursed him as I wound the watch for the third time since dawn. Two nights later, Jerry slipped into my room.
Dorothy, I have heard you are sick.
It's a fever. Where have you been all week?
They would not let me come. Tonight, I ran away for a while.
What do you mean?
I mean, If my father accepts the marriage gift, I am to be the wife of Ramabu. He is head man. I had no choice. Do you care?
What if I did?
I ask you, do you?
If you were married to me, you could only look forward to being a widow.
There is a way. If you
Wait.
Care enough.
Just start.
What is wrong?
Here, let me have it. I gotta get it started. I must have forgotten to wind it.
What are you doing? What are you saying?
It won't run. It won't run. Ramabu will find out.
But if he's running, hold it to your ear.
Huh?
It was the drum. It's that.
Oh. Oh, I thought it was a watch. I thought it was a watch.
Listen. There is a way out of the valley. I know about it.
So do I, Jerry. There are 20 guards watching.
No, I mean another one. It is behind the waterfall where you made the magic thing of bamboo.
What?
A little path goes up the cliff. Very steep. But I have climbed it. We can go together, if you care.
But I'm sick. Maybe in a day or
if
two.
If the magic thing stops a day or two, maybe too late.
If I'd known about it a week ago, before I caught the
fever.
In a
few days, I may be married to Ramabu.
All right, marry him.
Don't say that.
I'm sick, Jerry. I can't do it. Go ahead and marry him if you want. Leave me alone. Tossed away the hours of night and day, lying on my cot bathed in sweat. And time itself seemed to gel into one great mass of fever with no form or dimensions. And the fever sang in my ears when I strained to hear the watch. Sometime I mistook the drums of my own heart. I fought to stay awake, to keep my senses to live, fought against odds that grew greater by the hour. Sometimes in my delirium, I thought that Jerry had slipped into the room like a ghost, had wound the watch and talked to me and left. But I could never remember anything that she'd said. And then finally one night, just before dawn, I woke. And though suddenly, terror was in the room. The name of the terror. Jerry? Jerry, are you here? There's no sound. It's like it stopped. The watch is broken and it stopped. Sometimes in a fever there comes a moment of clarity and strength, and I knew suddenly what I must do. Without trying to find the watch, I leaped from my cot and headed for the waterfall. By daylight, I was halfway up the rock wall, drenched by the falling spray and dog tired. But the slope from here on was gentler, and I kept moving on up the cliff. Now and then, I stopped to look back, and that's when I saw Jerry!
Wait, honey, come!
But I saw something else, too. Jerry was 100 feet below me, and beyond her, at the base of the cliff, was Ramabu and half the tribe. There was nothing I could do now but pray.
I love you.
I saw Ramabu raise his bow, draw back the arrow, and let it go. I saw her fall and lie there on the rocks. I saw Ramabu pick her up, carry her back toward the village. I knew the greatest thing I'd ever owned was gone. But my life was once again, and this time truly useless. I turned and plunged into the jungle.
Well, I suppose it was a couple of 3 months later when Tom Dawson showed up in Port Moresby again. Elizabeth had sold all his paintings and left Don Ducard's schooner long before, so Tom moved into his old house and he stayed pretty clear of everybody, all except for a night here in the bar now and then. He didn't tell any of us what he'd done or where he'd been. And I suppose we never would have known if that hadn't been for a coincidence that happened one night. Yes, I was tending bar just as I am now, and suddenly some fella walks up and slaps a carter.
On your feet, Joe! Will Chaulis is back in town! Well, for the love of...
I'm 6 months dry and rare ago.
Hey, where the devil you been, huh?
Oh, so far back country, never even heard of beads. How can you cheat them? Oh, say, I stumbled onto something, though. You remember that painter Tom Dawson?
Yeah.
Well, you remember that watch, what's-her-name, give him? Well, there it is.
Well, where'd you get that?
In the forsakenest piece of country I've ever found in 20 years of trading. Believe me, Joe.
Where'd you get that watch?
Hey, Tom! Tom, you know Will Jonas.
Where'd you get that watch?
Well, I guess from the person you left it with.
I didn't leave it with anybody.
That's not what she said.
She? What do you mean? Tell me, who? Was it Jerry?
Yeah, that's her name.
She's alive?
Twice as natural. She's living in that house you built. Alone, if you're interested.
Ramapo. What about him?
Oh, the head man.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it seems he lost face when he let you get away. They figured you for their good luck or something. Anyway, they booted him out a long time ago.
And Jerry, she's all right. She's living in my house.
Yeah, alone. She made that plenty clear
Thanks.
In case you...
Thanks for everything.
Yeah, I'm glad. Hey, where you going? Well, what about this watch? It's yours. Well, I'll be up. Hey, Joe.
Yes?
I'll trade you this watch for a bottle. How about it?
Well, that was 5 or 6 years ago. Nobody around here has ever seen Tom Dawson since. Because all of us have got a pretty good idea where he went, though. Yeah. And I'll lay odds on one thing, stranger. I'll bet you he's happy.
Under the direction of Norman McDonnell, Escape has brought you The Silent Horror by Hugh Cave.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 22nd, 1951 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.